The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. How nice it is to do the stupa ceremony, isn't it? I just love it. Thank you. Something very still. We go out there, we do it, we come back. It's really nice. Someone asked me to talk today about the Dharma as peace of heart. Not the Dharma brings peace of heart, but the Dharma as peace of heart. We'll come back to that. A couple of nights ago, we were talking about the shooting recently in Roseburg and how we respond to this. These things keep happening, and every time this kind of thing happens, you know, we think, how do we respond to this and what can we do? And we had a really interesting discussion, as many of you know. And when things like this happen, it's hard to think about it in terms of peace of heart. We want to do something. We want to help. We want to stop these things happening. And peace of heart sounds kind of a little self-absorbed, you know. I have my peaceful heart and that's all I care about. And it's not like that, actually. How do we apply the Dharma to the horrible things that happen? There's earthquakes, you know, tsunamis, shootings, war. And especially the awful things that are done by human beings. We can try to explain them in terms of science or psychology or karma, but really can't completely understand, actually. We don't really know why things happen to some people, not other people, why an awful thing happens to a whole group of people over here, not that group of people over there. Have they all got some horrendous karma that caused them to be washed away by a tsunami? It doesn't quite, it's hard to fathom that. The law of karma is a universal law, whether we understand it or not. And it's not the only thing at work. There's other laws. There's laws of physics, laws of gravity, laws of change, you know, laws of nature. And they all work together and it's all very complicated. And the law of karma, a little bit of an understanding of that, helps us to accept the things that happen. But it doesn't mean we completely understand them. And maybe you don't have to completely understand. It's easier to accept natural disasters, even though it may be awful. You can't blame anyone for an earthquake or a volcano. But the things that are caused by humans are harder to deal with because you can blame somebody. It's somebody's fault, you know. Shooting, effects of global warming, war, you know, caused by people, fundamentally, mostly. And there's other things too. And we don't understand why people do some of the things they do, so we feel sort of helpless and hopeless sometimes because what can we do and how do we understand? And these things keep on happening and we feel that there's not anything we can really do about them. So it's, you know, it's easy to despair and sort of think, you know, what can we do? But actually we can do something. Sometimes we are in a position to help in practical ways with, you know, food, clothing, comfort if we happen to be nearby, or money if it's far away. Or we can offer merit, and we can offer merit to the people who are suffering, the people who are hurt, and if it's a thing caused by humans, the people who do the harm, somebody who kills a bunch of people they don't even know. They're the people who really need merit because it must be such a horrendous situation to be in to do something like that out of some desperation that people don't understand. They may need more merit than anybody and compassion. To try to find compassion for everybody, people hurt, people who do harm, people who are trying to help, you know. There are some kinds of disasters, it must be really, really hard to pick up the pieces. And people who are filled with grief and anger, to have compassion for them. Sometimes people just do, you know, they have sort of unskillful responses because they're really angry and upset about what's happened. And they may react in ways that we feel unwise. But to try to see the good intention in people. People who try to help, people who are upset and angry. If we, people feel anger and grief, it's because they care. We talked about this the other night. If we didn't care, it would be awful. You know, something would happen, oh, there's another shooting. And sometimes it gets a little bit like that because there's so many of these kinds of things. You can get kind of blunted, you know. But the closer you are to something, the more you feel it. The shooting in Roseburg was not that far away. And one of our congregation was in Roseburg working in the hospital and saw some of the victims and their families. And they made a very deep impression on them because it brings it close to home. You see the people, you see the suffering, you feel with them. And so we should. And it's always like that. The closer it is to us, the more we feel it. And yet, wherever it may be, the people who are feeling it when it's somewhere very far away, the people there are just like the people, just like us. They have their lives, their feelings, their families, their children are getting killed. It's exactly the same as it is for us. And to feel with as best we can, to feel with people who are harmed, people who are fleeing their homes, and people who are causing these things, who may be deluded, crazed, or, you know, trying to do what they feel is best in some way that seems really weird to us. To try to have compassion for all of these beings, how to do that? To widen our heart as big as we can to embrace all these beings, all these situations, all this awfulness. Not easy. We are all part of Buddha nature. All of us know that somewhere in us. And people who react angrily are kind of responding to that in a certain way because they're really sad that something has happened. And out of that grief comes anger. And the response is to our common humanity, knowing that this is an awful thing that we do not wish to happen, whether it's war, people displaced, famine because of what we do, shootings, all these things, to try to find compassion. Acceptance, forgiveness, you know, if we can, the more we can understand something, the better we can accept it, the more we can understand where somebody is coming from, the more we can forgive them for what they do. If we knew exactly what it was like to be another person, we couldn't judge them. We would just have to have compassion because we would be able to feel something of their suffering rather than think, oh God, how awful, how could they do that? To be able to understand is to help us to accept and forgive. And we can't understand ever what it's like to be another person. Even though it's completely close to us, we don't know what it's like to see through their eyes. We really don't. But we can try. We can try to sympathize, try to see their point of view, even when we don't agree with it, to try to understand as best we can. And when something does happen, if we feel called to some social action or to helping, well, it's much better if we can act with kindness and compassion and not with righteous anger. Righteous anger doesn't help. But compassion, I think of Mother Teresa. She wasn't marching about angrily, you know. She was just helping, just trying to help the poorest of the poor, doing what she could. She was not marching about with placards. And there are those who do strive for social change. But if they can do it without anger and polarization, it's much better than you know, getting upset, if they just to try to help with kindness rather than righteousness, seems to be much better. So we can make a difference in our little way, whoever we may be. It's not just all negative. We can do something. The Dharma as peace of heart, as I said, not brings peace of heart, the Dharma as peace of heart. To practice the Dharma is to practice peace of heart. In the midst of all these conditions, whether they're big things happening or little things, most of the time we're dealing with things on a much more mundane level, our own little irritations and angsts, arguing with someone we love about what movie we're going to watch or how we wash the dishes, you know. And you hear these stories of people having these little trivial arguments, and then one of them goes out and gets hurt or killed or something awful happens. And then the other might think, oh God, why did I do that? Why didn't I tell them I loved them before they walked out the door, you know? And when something big happens, it kind of reminds us of what's much more important than washing the dishes my way. You know, it seems as silly, but it does happen, you know? People have these little arguments because we take each other for granted. We think we're going to see them again. And we usually do, of course, but every now and then the tsunami comes in and we just never know. And as we can bear that in mind, not always looking for the awful thing and not being worried about it all the time, but never taking it for granted, the stability and peace of our lives. And by that, interestingly, this gives us peace of heart. Because when we know that nothing is completely reliable, nothing is completely satisfactory, everything changes all the time, and to be able to dwell within that, there is peace of heart in there because we're not clinging to things so much. We're appreciating them as they come, but not grasping on and not taking them for granted. To practice love and kindness, restraining ourselves when they're irritated or angry or just having a bad day, to practice kindness to the people we dearly love and see every day and to people we just meet in the street or in the supermarket. It makes such a difference. Living in harmony with the people we live with the people we work with the people we just meet. Living in harmony is such a wonderful thing. The Buddha talked about it a lot in community. Live in harmony. Harmony is a Sangha treasure. Whether we're monks living in the monastery, a meditation group, people coming together for a retreat, coming together on a Sunday, how do we arrange the chairs in the Buddha hall? You know, I try to stay away from the chairs. But all these little ways, you know, that we can live in harmony and relinquish my way. Not insisting on my way, my view, you know. We can have different ways of doing things. We can have different views about things. And it's okay, we don't have to all agree in order to be harmonious. We can actually agree to disagree, as long as we're not thumping each other over the head with our views. Practicing peace of heart. Because all of these things are the practice of peace of heart. Practicing kindness, compassion when awful things happen. Practicing restraint and kindness when we're irritated or annoyed. Practicing peace, harmony. When we're busy, drowning in the details and the never-ending rush of events, information, people wanting to connect with us, us wanting to connect with other people, stuff going on, just constant. Seeing people walking down the street with their little phone in hand, lest somebody be trying to get in touch with them. And not knowing, you know, not seeing everything around them and all the people walking by, it seems such an odd way to live. And to just look up, disengage for a moment. Here I am. Here are these people around me. I'm not just stuck in my little thing here. To disengage just for a minute, take a breath and just practice peace of heart, just in that moment, you know, because it's right there. It's just a relinquishing of the grip on the stuff. Looking up and seeing what's around us. Looking up at the bigger picture. Not looking down. When you're looking down at the little details, we're looking down. If we're looking up, the details are there, but we're seeing something bigger. And it brightens our attitude. Seeing the positive side of things. Good things happen, as well as awful things. People do great acts of kindness, you know. Most people are just getting on with their lives and trying to be reasonable human beings. They're not in the news. To remember that as well as the other. When we're ill or we're in pain, how to practice peace of heart? Acceptance. We talk about this quite a bit, being sick and in pain because, you know, it comes our way. Acceptance, of course, is the key that unlocks the gateless gate, as we always say. And the illness and the pain can help us with that. Because when we don't accept it, it makes it a whole lot harder. And when we're sick or we hurt, if we can just sit still with it and not try to barricade it out or push against it, but to let it go through, sit still with it, sit still within it, sit still beneath it. However it works for us, because people do this a little differently. However we are able to sit still in the midst of pain, illness, fear. We can practice peace of heart right there, because we have to, it's right there in our face. And it teaches us compassion for ourselves and other beings who have pain and illness. If we didn't have any pain, we couldn't have compassion for people suffering in awful ways. There is something beyond our immediate suffering, something that we look up to, that we dwell within, that is greater than all of us, all our little concerns and worries and irritations and all that. We can entrust ourselves to that. And we actually do without even thinking about it. When we go to sleep at night, we're not resisting it, we're just entrusting ourselves. Trusting that we'll wake up in the morning. Trusting that, you know, the volcano won't blow up or we won't get, you know, swallowed in a fiery pit. It's kind of nice thinking that we probably won't. And we don't even think about it. We just entrust ourselves. Sleep. If we're lucky. Some of us don't sleep, do our best. Worry and anxiety, fear of the future. I think everyone's more or less prone to worry and anxiety and fear. None of us is completely equanimous and without any worry of any kind. Be nice, but maybe there's a few people like that, but they have to really work on it, I think. It's a constant training not to let worry, fear, anxiety rule our life. Because it arises for everybody. And when we see it arise, there it is. And if I don't pay attention, I can just drown in it and get all worried and upset about something that may or may not happen. But if I can pay attention and see it coming over the horizon, there's worry and fear. And just sit right in the middle of it. And not be afraid of the fear, not think, well, if I'm afraid, there must be something to be really afraid of. Sometimes it's just nameless dread, you know. Sometimes there's nothing to be afraid of. We're afraid of something that never happens. But just to be still and see it coming really helps. Helps us not to drown in it. To make a deliberate effort to relinquish that grip. Because worry is like a kind of a grip. If I'm anxious and worried and trying to figure it all out and see everything coming before it does, and maybe I can control my life and not have the bad things happen. But it's miserable, it's exhausting, and it doesn't work because the things that happen are very often the things we hadn't even thought about worrying about. If we had thought about it, we might have, you know, died of worry long ago. I had a lovely conversation with Ramastamugo one time. We were out at the coast, And we went on a little walk we used to go on when we were taking care of Reverend Master out there. And we were walking along, and I turned around and I said, had we known 15 years ago that in 15 years Reverend Master would have died, they expect that, Reverend Master Dizey would have died, Reverend Ecker would have left, I'd be the abbess of Shasta Abbey and you'd be the lay ministry advisor and all this, we'd have died of worry. But actually, we just did it, you know, and here we are. So worry doesn't seem to help a whole lot. You can worry about everything, but then actually when life comes your way, you just deal with it. And the worry doesn't help a whole lot. Occasionally you have to make a plan for something, but the worry is not terribly productive. To entrust ourselves, to stop trying to figure everything out, everything that might go wrong, to entrust ourselves in faith and in stillness to great compassion, the great matter for which we train, to keep looking up and seeing that, to kind of keep our eye fixed on that. We still deal with the details of life, but to keep on looking up in faith. This is where we're going, you know. Not a worry thing, but just we're moving here and we have a direction and something sustains us. Not looking down anxiously at all the details all the time. Worrying about our training. Feeling we don't train hard enough. We don't meditate well enough. We don't keep the precepts well enough. Well enough for what? For whom? There isn't somebody up in the sky making notes. But it's funny how we often have in the back of our mind somebody up there making notes. Am I good enough? Am I going to be with the sheep or with the goats? You know, am I going to go this way or that way? And we don't really have to worry about that. I think we just have to do our best and trust that there's something a whole lot bigger than my judgment of myself and my ideas about my training. Just keep on doing our best. Coming back to what we're doing right now. Trusting that doing our best is actually the best we can do and all we need to do. Reverend Master used to say, just doing the very best you can is all that is asked of you. It's all you need to do. Just do the best you can, however that may be, whatever it may look like, whatever we may think of it. I think we're very prone to judge our training as somehow failing to meet the grade. I don't think it's like that. And to entrust ourselves like this is to practice peace of heart, to see ourselves worry about our terrible training or the things that might happen, and to just relinquish the grip a little bit, because it's really just a form of self-concern. If I'm well worried about my training, I'm just worrying about me and my training, what about just doing my best? You know, to find the balance between complacency, I'll just cruise along, I'm doing fine here, and not having to do anything. The balance between that and getting overly stressed and anxious about everything, thinking our training is terrible and, you know, and getting ourselves all stressed out and miserable and probably everybody else as well. There's a balance here to keep on making our best effort, but with peace of heart. You know, practicing peace of heart. Kanzeon, sitting in royal ease, is a wonderful image. There she sits at ease with one foot up and her hand out like this. You know, that lovely statue in the museum, wherever it is, I can't remember what it's called. But you know the one I mean. Just beautiful. Very aware, awake, and completely relaxed. Be nice to be a little more like that for some of us, but then we're striving to be more relaxed, you know. Just to kind of let it go a little bit, relinquish our grasp, relinquish our ideas about how we should be. If I was training properly, I'd be like this, I'd be like this lovely, relaxed, at ease Kanzeon. But actually, I'm just me, a bit of a mess. But to be at ease within our being a bit of a mess, to just accept ourselves, our shortcomings, our trying to do our best and somehow doing it all seemingly all wrong, trying to do the right thing and making a pig's ear of it and getting a mess. Just to accept all of these things and see the pure intention within them, the pure intention and their aspiration to do our best, the pure intention of other beings, their aspiration to do their best, whatever it may look like, and to just kind of relax a little bit with it all, relinquish that judgment, that not good enough thing. Practicing peace of heart, trusting our pure intention, trusting our training that it will, that it does already carry us to the other shore. We're already on the other shore. The other shore comes to us. Just not to keep striving while still doing our best. There is a delicate balance. And I think peace of heart is within that balance. To look beyond the mundane. I think this is the most important aspect. Not to drown in the details, not to be always looking down at what I'm doing now. To look up, to look beyond the little details, the busyness, all the things that we embroil ourselves in. Beyond the tragedies and the suffering that we encounter, the things we, you know, the Roseburg shooting. There's something that is beyond all of this, and it's hard for us to understand, especially when something really awful happens. And yet, there is something that embraces all of it, and that embraces all our little worries, concerns, not good enoughs, mistakes, irritations, all of that, to look beyond all of this stuff of our daily life to that which embraces all of it. It's not separate. It contains all of it. And if we can remember just to look up and see that, or look towards that when we don't seem to see it, it really helps to foster peace of heart. Everything takes place within the great matter. Nothing separate, nothing different, nothing unworthy, nothing better or worse. Everything takes place within that. And to look beyond these little details of life, beyond the tragedies and so forth, doesn't mean we don't pay attention. On the contrary, we take greater care. We're more kind, more compassionate, feel more deeply for other beings. We love beings more when we see it all within the bigger context, because within that which embraces everything, because we have room for it. We're not squeezing it all out with this little busyness of our little concerns, but we allow room for all of that. We allow space for real concern, love, and compassion for beings, because we're not just stuffed with worry and detail and busyness and views, our views, constant views. Self-view, my view of me, my view of what I'm like, what I am, my view of my dreadful training, or my not really bad training, and I'm really quite a nice person, or I'm a dreadful person. All that is all just self-view. And to be able to just relinquish the grip on that now and then, and look up, look beyond. Practicing peace of heart. We just paid reverence to Reverend Master Jiyu, who was the epitome of the practice of peace of heart. She sat still through all kinds of things. People bad-mouthing her, people leaving, people coming, people creating problems, people doing their best, people, you know, training well, people not doing very well, illness, disability, death. She sat with stillness through all of that, practicing peace of heart, sitting still like a mountain. It was really something. Yes, she'd get irritated sometimes. She was a human being. She would make mistakes. And yet, within all of that, she would sit still and practice peace of heart and held that out to us, the practice of faith in that which is greater than all of us. Just have faith in building this place, not knowing how it is all going to turn out, just taking one step at a time, going to the next thing, and then the next thing. Walking forward in the dark, very often. Practicing peace of heart amidst all of that. I would like to be like that. Stillness and faith in the midst of all conditions, in life and death, health, sickness, ups and downs of life. And that's her teaching for us today. Thank you.